on this edition of The Self-Publishing Show.
The first draft is my last draft every single time. I have been called a unicorn a few times. I'm rare.
Publishing is changing. No more gatekeepers. No more barriers. No one standing between you and your readers. Do you want to make a living from your writing? Join indie bestseller Mark Dawson and first-time author James Blatch as they shine a light on the secrets of self-publishing success. This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Hello and welcome. It's The Self-Publishing Show with me, James Blatch.
And me, Mark Dawson.
I'm very excited, Mark, because tomorrow I'm interviewing the second female RAF Tornado pilot.
Oh, dear. Well, it's good for her, but I'm not sure. Does she know what she's letting herself in for, basically?
I don't think she does.
That's the question.
I mean, she'll be on to the lawyers straight away afterwards for the restraining order.
Did you set this interview up?
I did.
Yes, she's thank written, you. That's all I need to know. Move on.
She's written an excellent book.
Oh, I like it. Oh, and well, for the listeners, James.
Yes,
it's an officer, not a gentleman. That's a really good title. Like it.
Yeah, good title. Nice cover. And she self-published it. And last time I looked, it was in the low thousands in the Kindle store in the UK with 140-odd five-star reviews. So she's no slouch, Mark, I can tell you what she turns her mind to. I think she does motivational speaking as well. So it might be this book was the sort of non-fiction that we often talk about for somebody who has like a consulting business. But you can make money through books. Mm-hmm. If you find that audience, and I think she's done that anyway. We'll find out.
Can
I
you?
Will obviously. Yes, you can.
You can make money through books.
So I will chat to her to us. I'm excited about that. But I'm also excited about today's interviewee, who also has a military connection. He served in the British Army. His name is Steve Higgs, and we are going to find out how to apply yourself to turn your second career into a fantastic, lucrative career of an author, as an author, and all it takes is dedication. A bit like Roy Castle, if you're British and old enough, you remember that. Okay, let us say a big thank you to Matthew Doggett from Alabama, USA, who has become a Patreon supporter of The Self-Publishing Show this week. And Matthew has joined the ranks of people with direct access to lots of goodies in the show. You can go to patreon.com/self-publishing show if you would like to join Matthew. A couple of parish notices. Our 101 course is going to be open for business on September the 23rd. So 22 days from the moment we are recording this, but this will go out on Friday, so less than that even. It's going to be open for a couple of weeks, the 101 course. And I think, Mark, shall we keep our 24-month payment plan? Mm. I think we'll keep that in place because it's still, I know, a tough environment for people and probably going to get tougher economically. At least the older economy is going to get tougher. I think the digital economy has had a fillip this year, and that may well continue into next year as well. So, in fact, as somebody once said, there's never been a better time to be a writer.
There's never been a better time to own shares in Apple. I don't know if you saw yesterday. Apple is now worth more than the entire FTSE 100.
Yeah.
Tesla
has also rescued my very limited and terrible short share portfolio. Tesla's done very well as well. Okay, just one digital thing I do want to mention. It's just actually broken today, and I noticed it, and it's slightly annoying, is that Google have added a 2% tax to every ad transaction in the UK and Austria. And I've done this in response to the governments of these countries, the UK. I know more about than the Austrian situation, but in the UK, they added a 2% tax to search engines because of what the government called a misalignment between the volume of trade that they do in a country and the tax they pay in that country. And of course, when you're spread across many countries, you have to make decisions about where you process your cash and why would you decide to process your cash in a country where it charges 20% corporation tax versus one that charges 12. However, that's irritating to the UK government. So they introduced this 2% tax, and promptly today, Google have emailed everybody who has an ads account with them saying they're adding 2% to every transaction, which is I think the point of that tax. It was for them to pay, not to pass on to business owners like ourselves. But it underlines our position really on Google AdWords and YouTube ads for authors doesn't really make financial sense. Hasn't made financial sense since they changed some of the rules, particularly with YouTube ads, and makes even less sense now. It's going to be more expensive to advertise. So yeah, another nail in that particular coffin as far as authors are concerned. If on the other hand, Mark, you're selling JCBs, or do Americans have JCBs? My camera's gone weird again. Anyway, I'm in the dark.
I don't know.
Ignore that. Large dig. I think I drove past a big JCB plant in Georgia once. But anyway.
Yeah, one of trucks. They call them backhoes.
Backhoes. Wow, mm-hmm. I did not know that. Have you made that up?
Yeah, I've seen that. No, I saw it on kids' TV. My son likes something called, used to like something called Blippi. And Blippi is, well, basically he's a gazillionaire, made lots of money off parents like me. But one of the things he did was to go on a tour or drive a backhoe around. And I wondered for a while what that was. But it's actually, yeah, it's a JCB, a digger.
A digger. This is basically a big yellow digger that you get on sites. Yeah. But if we're selling big things like that, I think AdWords and YouTube ads still works. Now, talking of children's books and diggers, Mark Dawson, the thriller writer, the murder mystery, not police procedural, what would you describe your Atticus Finch as?
Detective.
Not Atticus Finch. Atticus something else.
Priest.
Detective.
Yes, I call those detective stories, yes.
That's You're right. Now going to add another string to your bow.
Yeah, I am. So we're looking to do some kids' books. So I've got, I put a post in the community a couple weeks ago asking for authors who wanted to work with me on a project. And this is what it will be. We're going to do some jointly written kids' books. I won't say too much about the title yet, or it's going to kind of harken back to the Enid Blyton Secret Seven Famous Five books. And going to be set in Southwold, which is a lovely, kind of very quaint and quite rich town on the east coast of England, near where I come from. Very kind of Victorian and cheechy, but quite fun. And we're going to have, I think we're going to do three books to start with, and we're going to see how we do. I'm going to probably do it in my daughter's name, or a combination of my kids' names. So might have my name as a surname, and the authors will all be referenced inside, the ones that we're working with. And looking to get three out, and probably going to be looking to do mostly in print. So it's going to be an interesting experiment. I'll definitely have to pick Karen Inglis's brains at some point, because she's done really well with her book, The Secret Lake, I think. Going to concentrate on getting those books into normal bookshops, indie bookshops.
Good. Yeah, let's call it Karen Ingalls, though.
Ingalls, yes, right, yes. And may look at offset printing rather than print on demand. May look at Fulfilled by Amazon rather than KDP print. Lots of different things I want to try to see how this might work. I think it could be fun. I don't think there are that many successful indies selling loads and loads in kids' books. Karen is certainly one of them. We know a few others. But I want to try my hand at it, see if we can and do that. And also, I mean, the main weird thing is for something that my daughter can read and enjoy. So I was in bed yesterday reading her, reading the first three chapters to her, which was really fun, and she enjoyed it. So we'll see. But it'll be a good little experiment to try.
Fulfilled by Amazon is where you organise the printing, and then your printers or whoever ship to a central location for Amazon then to do the sending out.
Amazon will stock it. So you pay a fee for basically warehousing, not a huge amount from what I can see, and then Amazon has like a fulfilment fee. So it's basically postage, packing and their margin on top. So I've just got to sit down and do some sums. I don't know exactly what the per copy cost will be. Obviously, the more you print, the cheaper it'll be. I think $6.99 in the UK is a sweet spot for kids' books of the kind that we're marketing or aiming to market. So I'm not sure there's going to be a huge margin in there for us. But, you know, we'll see. I may look at the print-on-demand option if the others don't work.
And presumably somebody somewhere has done the sums on a normal paperback print on demand versus Amazon fulfillment. I mean, obviously you've got to pay up front to have it printed, but is it, if you've got the money to do that, is it worth doing that over POD?
I think it might be. I think you might be looking at about $2 to $2.50 per copy. This is just me guessing a little bit. We've done a little bit before I did the deal with Welbeck. We were looking at running a project to print the Milton books ourselves, and you pay less the more you print, but you're paying more in terms of the amount that you're spending. So yeah, let's say you're looking at say £2 per copy for a 40,000 or 50,000 word novel. Then you add in another couple of quid for Amazon's fulfillment, then another maybe a bit on top of that for warehousing. You're getting up towards the £4-5 mark. So you might be looking at a margin of £2. But then that, obviously the bookshop's going to want to cut off that as well. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But I'll look into it and we'll report as we get into the project.
Yeah, that will be interesting. Have you got your character names yet? Is it going to be a central character or different stories and one universe?
No, four characters, four children, and a dog. So in the kind of the time-honoured Enid Blyton fashion, and they each have their own characteristics. Actually, going to have looking at my watch here, in 10 minutes, we have to get a move on. I've got a call with the writer who's done the first, who was doing the first book. A writer called Alan, who is really good. We're very, very, very pleased with how that's looking at the moment.
Good. Okay. Well, look, we can move on. I forgot to say that if you definitely are interested in 101 and you want to be notified when the course is open, you can go to selfpublishingformula.com/101. That will be the link to the page to sign up when it's open. But between now and then, that will be a wait list that you can join to get an email when it starts. Okay, right. Steve Higgs, yes, a British Army NCO, then an officer, I believe, has gone through the mill, I think, on the military front, and then turned his mind to writing. And this is revealed in this interview. Interestingly, not one of these people who was a prolific reader and always wanted to write. This is somebody who has turned their mind to this whole area, learnt it, and boy, has he mastered it as well. So let's hear from Steve Higgs.
This is The Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
Steve, very warm welcome to The Self-Publishing Show. Nice to have somebody, an English mate, down the road in sunny England.
Right. I guess I'm not aware of who you have on a regular basis and what that divide might be.
Well, I reckon...
Thank you for having me anyway.
You're very welcome. 70% probably in the United States of America and Canada, probably. And then not so many in the UK, Australia and South Africa. We need to work harder to get... it's generally, I suppose, English-speaking countries. Even fewer from Germany. I've had one German, I think, I can think of.
Right.
No, two Germans and no Frenchmen. Or French women. That's terrible. It makes us sound very little Englander at SPF. We need to broaden our horizons.
Yes.
Okay, look, we're going to talk about your amazing success story. But let's just very briefly just talk about your books before we get into the nitty-gritty of how you went from not writing, I think, in your 30s to where you are today. The first thing I'm going to say, if I look down at Steve Higgs in Amazon, is what a range of genres and covers. Quite an array and quite a spectrum, I would say.
Yes. I guess you're not wrong. They I think all have kind of the same flavor and feel. I get a lot of people who say they've read everything. So it's and I know okay. Mark talks about the value of a new lead, the value of a new reader, and I'm currently writing book 41, and I have people who have read all 40 across supernatural, suspense, urban fantasy, and cozy mystery.
Wow! Yeah, I think probably one of the things is you've changed your cover style a little bit. So if I look at the Patricia Fisher mysteries, give me the description you gave for. Just off air, your description.
Die Hard with Angela Lansbury in the lead role.
Perfect. And I can see you've played about a little bit with the cover style. So we've got sort of a more photographic style, maybe an older book, and then a illustrated, almost whimsical cover of a later one for Mugshot.
The cartoonish, if you like, the vector covers are the older.
Are they?
And that's been going throughout. And you're referring to the cover on The Missing Sapphire of Zangrabar, which was the first book. There's actually an interesting backstory with how that one came about, but that covers something I've tried recently, just because, and maybe this is something we'll touch on, I don't really know what I'm doing.
Interesting.
And I say that to a lot of people, because now that I am having success, I get people messaging me and contacting me and wanting to know quite what my secret sauce is. And I'm still trying to work that out for myself. And the real joy of that is... all the success that might be ahead of me when I finally do work that out. But yeah. that cover, it's just a more in keeping with the mystery genre rather than that sort of niche cozy. See how people reacted to it.
Yes. So sort of it's more Agatha Raisin is a kind of a BBC series at the moment, isn't it?
Of
a murder mystery, which is quite whimsical, very mystery, very Agatha Christie inspired.
I get a lot of people comparing.
Yes.
Comparing the two.
I can see what I've written
and then that. Yeah. Which again is completely by accident because I've never read an Agatha Raisin book.
So you are the accident man. Everything is by accident. Well, let's see. I mean, I like a challenge. Let's see if I can work out for you how you're successful. I hope I don't change anything because you're doing extremely well just with your blind moving forward. Okay, let's start from the beginning then. So I read your bio and I know that you wanted to write as a child like I did, wrote a few essays and half-heartedly mm-hmm. started and stopped books. And then decades go by with doing, I don't think, anything on the writing front, really. Is that right?
Very, very much. I was writing a column for a Forces magazine. I was in the army for 25 years. And I was writing a few other articles and such like. But while I had aspirations to write novels, I never really found the time. I always had other things that I was busying myself with. The army was very big on education. So I was studying a bachelor's degree or I was studying a master's degree. And then I was studying another master's degree. And those things eat very much into your time. So it kept sort of ticking away at the back of my head with there was this desire to tell these stories bubbling on in my head, and one of which I'm writing now, which I first started drafting 25 years ago or something very similar to that. But it was only really right at the final days of my army career I sort of knuckled down and said, if you're going to do it, you need to shut up and do it. You're 40 now, man, so get on with it.
And you wrote what then? So you had these stories bubbling around. Was it always these kind of murder mystery stories?
No. I had a lot, and I still have a lot. And you can't see it from where you're sat, but all around me in my lovely little log cabin are sheafs of A4 paper with hastily scribbled pages of notes for another series and another series and another series. And one day I might get to develop some of them. I think possibly not all of them, because I seem to develop them faster than I can actually write them. But I've got an awful lot of different things. And the first thing I wrote was Paranormal Nonsense. And it came to me almost like an epiphany one day. And there were all these programs on television like Charmed and Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Supernatural, all really sort of cascading over one another with the concept that the supernatural is real and it's all around us. And I felt I've got a strong desire to challenge that with, there's all these people that believe in it. And I don't know what your experience is, but I meet people on an almost daily basis who'll talk about the ghost that lives in their closet or their recently deceased grandfather still visits them. Or things that happen, the light switch goes, the light turns on by itself and they blame that on a ghost. So I wrote a character who would be employed by these people to debunk their mysteries. And so came to life that series.
Maybe a little bit Dirk Gently type.
I don't know who that
you
know, is.
No, I don't know who Dirk Gently is. Oh, you have to read Dirk Gently at some point. It was Douglas Adams' follow-up to Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. He had a holistic detective agency. So sort of that sort of thing. Anyway, sounds similar. So you wrote that just coming out of the army.
Yep.
And then what did you do? What was the process?
It took me a long time to finish. I hadn't finished it when I left the army. And then it was very much, right, well, you need a job now and go and start a new career. And so I was still sort of fiddling with the book. And I eventually finished it, but it took me 5 years.
Okay. That's quick.
Possibly, I don't know, but it took me it took me 5 years. That's how long it took. And then because I simply had no idea what I was doing, I then wasted about another 2 years trying to get it published.
Traditionally
published. I was doing all of the synopsis and reading books on how to write that in a particularly dynamic way that would get me hooked, and writing letters to agents. And in the end, I think it was the landlady in the public house that sits at the back of my garden, in a conversation one day, who suggested I questioned possibly why I didn't publish it myself. So then began this quest to actually do that. And the first copy of that went out on June the 17th of 2017.
2017. Yeah. Okay. And how did that sell?
It didn't. It didn't at all. And again, I'm living in this vacuum. I don't know any other authors. I don't know how any of this is done. I hadn't found Facebook groups. It hadn't even occurred to me to look on Amazon for books on how to publish your book. So I found, I think more by stumbling across it than anything else, the KDP portal, and uploaded a copy of a book that was filled with errors, that was grammatically terrible, that was a little long-winded in places, didn't have particularly good flow, but it was there. And a couple of people read it and said, actually, this is not bad, but it's just very poorly executed. But in the meantime, I started writing what would be the follow-up to that book. And that took me 5 months. And that came out in the December. And suddenly I started to believe that actually there might be something in this, apart from the fact that I really enjoyed doing what I was doing. So I think it was 5 years for the first book, 5 months for the second book, and then five in the next 5 months.
Wow. A book a month after that. That's incredible. Did you get another job, by the way?
Yeah. I'm a qualified mechanical engineer. I've had several jobs. I quit my full-time job on the board of directors of a multi-million pound mezzanine manufacturing company last September.
Wow. So you were earning it. You had a decent salary in the industry. Yeah,
absolutely. I had what many would consider to be a pretty decent salary, but I was very much wanting to not do it.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. Fair enough.
In fact, I hated the job with a passion.
Okay.
And it got to a head when I couldn't decide whether to put a tuna sandwich in my lunchbox or an axe. Mm. And at that point, I decided it was time probably to go.
And your colleagues who are surviving to this day are grateful for that decision. You didn't go postal on them. Okay.
Full berserk.
Yeah. So I want to, let's talk about the kind of the commercial journey. And then I want to talk a bit about the writing, because you've just hinted at that 5 years, 5 months, and then book a month. That's a really interesting area for me, and I think we can learn from. But we should underline, without too many spoilers in this little journey, that you are incredibly successful selling books today. So at what point did you start selling them?
About 12 months after the launch of the first book. So I, having sort of written 5 books in 5 months, I then at that point found a couple of Facebook groups from whom I could glean a few tips and tricks and information and places to like resources where I could find information on how to do things. And having done that, I was then able to start trying to advertise, trying to learn the marketing element of putting my books out there with Facebook and Amazon. And it was at that point where I'm starting to find out about online book sites where they like BookBub and Bargain Booksy and people such as that, that I was able to start finding a little bit of traction. And I think it was May of 2018, so 11 months after the first book went out, and I've got 6 or 7 books out at that point, and I made $500 in a month, and that was almost a eureka moment, because I'd made nothing. It was $5 here, $10 there, up until I think April, and then it was $200, and then $500, and then it was $1,000. And then I guess at that point I've started to look at it with the success stories I was reading other places with authors who had gone before me, and thinking, well, you know, there's no reason why you cannot do the same thing.
And you, those books you had at that point after the 11 months, was that one series?
That was absolutely. That was all Blue Moon. And it was, okay. It was just about at that point that I started to think about what else I might write.
Okay. So that's, I mean, that is helpful, I think, at the beginning when you've got one series. So your marketing, your blurbs, your covers and so on.
Absolutely.
Branded
pushing,
around.
Pushing book one with a view to there's read through and such like to come.
Yeah, all the stuff you were learning from these various groups. I hope SPF was in the mix of those groups in those early days.
And I'll be honest and say it wasn't. I was aware, and I couldn't tell you at what point I became aware of SPF, but it was, I guess it was one of those names that was bandied about. It took me a while to discover them, and then a little bit longer to decide that it was something that I really needed. But it's that you're operating in a void of information, and there's lots of information. There's lots of stones to look under.
Yes.
So it's trying to be educated enough to know which of those stones you should invest your money in. And that was, I think, what held me back for some time, because there's a lot of free to do first.
Yeah.
And I think that actually holding off a little while helped me in many ways, because by the time I got to SPF, I understood the language enough to learn.
Yes. This is a discussion we had the other day, actually, with the self-publishing podcast guys. Of course, they're now Sterling and Stone, that there is a culture of language and discussion that you can't learn overnight. You have to sort of be absorbed in it for a while before it seeps in and then becomes your language. And that's the point at which I think you can then start being a bit more advanced in this world. I think that's a really good point.
Sure. Okay. That's just my experience.
Yeah. No, I think it's a good point. Okay. So you made your first 500 and 1,000, and then did it just keep going up? And at the same time, I guess you're still writing and producing at quite a rate.
Well, I was still in full-time employment. So this is 2018. I'm still in full-time employment, and I'm working a solid 70 plus hours most weeks in that job, in that environment. I've got a young child who's just turned up.
Right.
And that draws on my time. Well, I've got another one now. that drew on my time, and it was very much, I took the starts, and I think having spent a long time in the army, and knowing what my physical limits were helped enormously, because I simply stopped sleeping for about 2 years. And so I would get up at 5 a.m. and write for 2 hours before cycling to work. I would get home at 6 or 7 o'clock in the evening. And when my wife retired at 10 o'clock, I would write until gone midnight.
Wow.
Because I needed the hours on the keyboard to get the words down. And so it was a continuous cycle of belief in myself and sacrifice to push myself through the barriers to get the next book done, and learning all the while with the marketing and other elements. But it was a difficult road, and it was a long time before I saw much more money. So I think I sort of shot up to a couple of thousand dollars, but then stalled for 7 or 8 months, not really getting anywhere, almost as if I'd created a blockage somewhere in that first series where people were not reading past it. I also think it was a lack of knowledge of marketing. And so as I'm trying to study, I'm learning as I go, but I'm also wasting money. Although I say wasting money, I've always looked at it as investing money. Investing money, much like Edison and his light bulb, in working out what not to do.
Yes.
So I was trying to learn all the time with, yes, I'm spending money, but I'm learning. I'm constantly on Facebook. I'm constantly on Amazon. I'm getting better at it. And the results aren't improving yet, but I had confidence that it would be. And I wasn't spending money I didn't have at any point. I was only investing either money I could afford to invest or money that I'd received from the previous month. So I'm 2,000 in, and I'm putting basically most of that back out to try and overcome all these knowledge barriers.
Yeah. Do you think your time in the armed forces gave you that discipline that you needed to apply yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no doubt. And that doesn't mean that a person who hasn't been in the army cannot have the same discipline, but that's where mine came from. I haven't watched television. I still haven't watched television in about 3 years. I don't read books. I go through a cycle of I'm writing or I'm or I'm working or I'm in the gym. And there isn't an awful lot else other than play with the children, kiss my wife.
Yes. Okay. I won't dwell on that last one. The children is a big factor in most people's lives. Things, I mean, people talk about your life being turned upside down and suddenly your priorities change. And I do wonder if that sort of ability in the army to spend every day thinking, how do we adapt? How do we change? How do we manage? How are we going to be good in changing circumstances? Is a really good, actually a really good training for having children and that sudden disruption, but really good for changing careers and applying yourself.
Well. Yes, there's no room for sympathy for oneself.
No,
that's a big thing. Yes, you've been shot. Now get on with it.
Yes. Thank you, sir. Yeah, it's like the Monty Python sketch, and they all miss their arms and stuff. It's just a flesh wound. Okay, yes. Good. So you carry on writing. Was it still Blue Moon? Have you changed series at this point?
No. I put the first Patricia Fisher mystery out in, I believe, and now I'm doing this from memory, May of 2019, but I started writing them at the end of 2018. I had a concept of the series. I wanted to keep pushing out the Blue Moon books because they were doing okay. There was a steady income from them. But I'd learned enough that there's these release strategies, and a lot of people talk about having this ability to fast release. So I'd stacked 4 books. And as those 4 are coming out one a month, I've then got books 5 and 6 being written while I'm still trying to write the Blue Moons. So it was just trying to cram in more books. So I was able to very slowly capture a small corner of the cozy mystery market. I didn't even know what cozy mystery was. That's a funny thing. I only found out when I'd written the Blue Moons and people were calling it cozy mystery. I'd never heard the term before. And that's how green I was in this industry.
And you say captured a small part of it. So I'm assuming at this point your sales did start accelerating.
So that was May. The first book came out in May of 2019. So second book in June, and in July, suddenly I'm making over $5,000. And at $5,000, I'm thinking, this is actually, you know, this is almost a lifestyle wage. It's great as a little top up on what I'm earning. For holidays and such like, but understanding that I'm really very much one foot on the rung of the bottom of a very tall ladder, and nothing stopping me from climbing it but my own desire and ambition, I'm looking at $5,000 thinking, well, actually, you know, I can multiply that. Yeah. I need more books and I need to be better at what I do, but I can multiply that. So that was July. I quit my job in September, although I'd actually walked away from it in August. And by January of this year, it was accelerating fast. Right. I think because my head was not distracted by a full-time job that was eating up 70-ish hours a week.
Yeah,
and making untold diabolical demands upon me.
Yeah. So where are you now in terms of income?
I've been on the 40,000 mark for, well, this will be the 4th month in a row.
Wow.
So I'm just on that cusp, and I'll give you the rundown for the year. So having quit the job, I was on 5,000, and I think it was then 6 and 6, and then 8 in the December. 10 in January, 16, 17, 20, and then suddenly that was 20 in April. In May, it was 38 something plus audiobook sales, which took me to just on the 40. The same in June, the same in July, and very much a little better than that this month. So it's going to be 40, 41 or 43 or something like that. I mean, that's a very healthy wage. Once the overhead's taken out of that,
yeah.
That's still over $30,000. It's £25,000. I'm very happy. And I know that I should be.
Your overhead, your advertising spend or your overheads, I don't know how much advertising you do, actually, we'll talk about that, is seems quite a relatively small. I mean, I'm almost 50% on the revenue from the books I'm marketing for our little imprint. I think Mark tends to talk about roughly a third. Yours sounds like smaller than that of your income.
My ad spend currently is about £8,000 for a £25,000 profit, 40,000 or what's it, 33,000 pound sale figure. So right. What's that? 25%.
Yeah, 25%. Yeah, that's good.
25%. Well, and that's about right, because I'm on my P&L, it's I'm making 400% ROI on all the investments added together. So I'm very happy with that. I'm trying to spend more money.
Yeah,
I'm very much. I mean, keenly. How can I spend more? Please let me.
Yeah. I guess you're talking about Amazon ads here, which is the one where
both things. I don't know who else this happens to, but I will run Facebook ads that they just don't spend.
Oh,
absolutely. I'll put a Facebook ad on, and I'll do four variations, and all four will get no impressions and spend no money. On a £25 budget each ad, I choose to raise it that high.
I'll talk to Mark about that, because that's, I don't hear that very often, because it's impressions based. I mean, certainly my ad spend, it's almost to the pound the same every day. How much you offer them, they take generally.
Yeah, and that is what I've heard from everyone. I don't know how unique that is to me. At the same time, I've got plenty of ads that will spend, and it's then trying to work out which ones are. I mean, there's a lot of analysis in this, isn't there? There's a lot of analysis with which ad is actually performing, and can I then put more on that, and the scalability of that, because you can't take a £10 ad that's making £20 in sales and throw £1,000 at it and get 2,000. Generally, is my experience. And very much on Amazon, which we touched on, I my spend is tiny. My ROI is really good, but I just do not seem to be able to get keyword traction. I can put ads up with stacks of keywords. The keyword that performs and drives sales is my name, almost always, or my characters' names. And delving through my also boughts and such like, and spending hours reaming Amazon and Listopia and all these other sites, great sites for keywords which ought to work, does not seem to get me an awful lot of traction. So I'd happily spend $1,000 a day, on advertising, and I do not seem yet to be able to. But this is, again, it's issue. You have to learn, and you have to go back over things. And I'm studying Mark's course for, I think, the third time, the Facebook one.
Yeah, going back over it. And I see you're in KU, you're in Kindle Unlimited.
And that is doing quite well for me, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, well, let's talk about the writing, which I think is probably the key, or one of the main keys to your success, is your ability to write books, create series, and have products there. And very often people come to us and say, I mean, I'm struggling to make a profit here. I can't get my ads working. And they've got two books or three books and in my position, haven't got a book out yet, and I'll have one book and it'll take me a while, I think, to get the second one out and so on. And I'm so jealous of the people who have that ability to turn out the books, because it's absolutely crucial to commercial success, isn't it? Also, you're proving that.
Well, there, I'm sure there are many routes to that success. One of them, and I've sort of blogged a few times on a couple of author forums and said, you know, this is how I've done it, just out of interest, because when I quit the job and went full time, it was very much here. I've just cut my parachute, and I've no idea where I'm going to land. So watch if you dare, and then just sort of gave a monthly report on how that was all going. I talk about grind and quantity a lot, because the grind is me sacrificing everything else in my life that I might want to do, like going to the pub for a pint, because you can't write once you've had a couple of pints. It just doesn't, for me personally, maybe other people write their best stuff. Yes. Down in the Florida Keys, I believe, drunk half the time. But I certainly cannot. So I don't do a lot of things that I otherwise might because I'm in that cycle of grind.
Yeah.
And I'll take my foot off the pedal at some point. So there's a lot of grind to get the words out, to get the books done, which requires hours, and that leads directly into quantity because I've said to a number of people it's very difficult for you to be successful with one book or two books because there's very little for you to push. But actually, when you've got 10 book box sets that you can almost give away to, you know, I've just had a big promotion on BookBub this weekend that has returned me quite a worthwhile amount of my investment, and is continuing to bring me books, and I'll get a bump on KU from that. I anticipate about a week from now that will probably last a month or more.
Yeah.
So small investment, really quite heavy income, but that 10 book set then leads into more books in that series, which having given them 10 books, they're quite invested. They will want to know what happens next, I hope.
And out of interest, was that an international deal with BookBub or
US? It was actually, The US ones are hard to come by, but they are.
When you're in KU, I think they're quite difficult to come by, yeah.
Yeah, I've had a couple of US deals, and they are almost a license to print money.
Yeah. Now I've got, I think I mentioned it to Mark actually on the podcast last week, I've got a screen grab of a BookBub international deal, and there's this bumbling along. There's the spike for the deal, and then you see KU going up like that afterwards in the days that follow, which is great. And as you say, lasts at least a month and gives you just that little bump of readers and stuff that actually trickles on for quite a long time and builds. It gives you something else to build on.
That's my third BookBub in 4 months.
Great.
Which I believe is relatively hard. Relatively hard to replicate.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. A lot of people talk about apply. And I certainly did for probably 2 years before I had my first one. But ever since then, I've done reasonably well. But I've never had a single title pushed by them. Only the big box sets where I can show real value, I think, for their readers.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk about the books a bit more. So I'm looking at your latest books. In fact, the last couple of Patricia Fisher mysteries I clicked on are both pre-orders. You've got a couple coming out in the future. They look, your readers predominantly female?
Predominantly octogenarian American female.
Right. So you can narrow it down to that.
Yeah. Trying to identify that avatar reader. So you can push to them. Yeah. My Facebook ads are, I don't advertise to anybody under 50.
Okay.
For that series. The main character is a 53-year-old divorcee. I wrote that very specifically. I didn't. Soon after I started writing, recognized that I had a very specific audience for that, more by accident. Again, it's that I write what occurs to my brain to write without really considering what commercially might come afterwards. I'm learning to think a little bit more about things before I do them. But I'm not writing to market. I'm not doing that. And that's probably not very clever.
Well, you've done a lot right, Steve. And there's obviously a natural storyteller in you. And I think I'm slightly curious that an ex-army British bloke comes out and wants to write. And I look at that cover and I was surprised. I don't know why. Right. It's clear, because we live in a world of cliches and stereotyping. I expected you to be sci-fi or, you know. But this looks like
military.
Yeah,
Chris Ryan.
Yeah, sort of a Neanderthal stuff that I like. But this looks, I mean, obviously, like, I love murder mysteries as well. And this looks, I would have said, at a guess, would have been written by a woman as well, which again is probably belying cliches. But 100% exactly in the market for those readers who get through a book a day. Or, you know, those whale readers, as we call them, and there's a lot of them out there, so particularly in America, who devour. And I'm sure you get emails from people hammering on your door saying, when's the next one?
Constantly. I'm trying to feed, and this is one of the reasons I'm writing as advice, is I'm trying to feed 4 series a month.
Wow.
And so, I cannot, but I'm trying to feed 4 different series a month.
You still worked out where your limitations are.
Well, I do actually have to sleep and eat.
Yes. Well, perhaps if you didn't kiss your wife so much. Give me some time back.
Once a day. Once a day.
Once lucky. A day. Okay. Yeah. I keep trying to get into the writing, and we keep getting drawn back to kind of the productivity and so on. So let's talk about the writing. So you sat down there, presumably with no formal writing training, although you may have been on some army sort of.
I think we courses. Can just say no formal writing training. I've never read a craft book. I did creative writing at school, and that's pretty much where it ended at 16.
And you sat down and you wrote your first book. As you say, when you self-published it, you hadn't had it edited, I don't think. You said it had typos and stuff.
No, I still haven't had any of my books edited. I do it myself. Wow. I taught myself that skill.
Wow.
I don't have a developmental editor. I have a proofreading team of ARCs. But my first draft is my last draft every single time.
Wow. Wow.
And
that's amazing.
I have been called a unicorn a few times.
Yes, rare.
I'm rare.
Yes.
In this industry, it would seem, but it's working.
Yeah, it really is. Did you say you've dropped reading, or you're not reading because of time? Which is one of those lines that goes around, you can't be a good writer without being a prolific reader. Yes. But did you read a lot before you started writing when in your army days?
I'm going to say yes, but I guess it depends on one's baseline for what a lot might be. I certainly have read, but nowhere near as much as many people. And have I read a lot of urban fantasy, though I'm writing urban fantasy? The answer is no. I've read some. Have I read cozy mystery because I'm writing cozy mystery? Never.
You've never read cozy mystery?
Never read a cozy mystery in my life.
And yet you're a significant name now in the world of cozy mystery writing.
By absolute accident. I was writing it without really knowing what it was that I was writing. I was writing stories, and I envisaged the life of this woman and turned it on its head, gave her a catalyst event that would send her spiraling on this course where she had to begin solving mysteries to save her own life as much as anything else. And it's gone from there. And I just wrote, I'll regale you very briefly with the story. So I'm still in full-time employment, and the lovely lady that worked in reception one day, cause I've got half a dozen books published at this point and people know about them. She asked me how I came up with the characters, and I stood in the doorway, and demonstrated how brilliant I am. If you like, by creating a character, giving her this life-changing event, sticking her on a boat and inventing a mystery for her to solve. And that then stewed in my head for 6 months until I absolutely had to write it.
Right.
And it was just one of those chance conversations that caused the what is now, I'm just about to start writing book 17 in that series. I can reliably put a book on pre-order and expect 1,000 sales before it's launched. I don't really know how I've done that, only that I write what I think people would like to read.
And that's 17 Patricia Fisher novels, is it?
I'm just about the mugshot, which you've seen there, which is on pre-order. I haven't written a single word yet.
Oh, okay. But you're confident you'll sit down and get that done?
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think you said there's 4 books there on pre-order. 3 of them I haven't started writing.
Okay. So when you write, what's your routine now that you're not encumbered with this 9-to-5 job? What, or even more than that?
I roll out of bed at about 0500. I write for a couple of hours. My eldest child, who is just about turned 5, rolls out of bed, much like an elephant exploding into the room. And that keeps me out of trouble for a couple of hours. And by 9 o'clock, I'm in a log cabin at the bottom of my garden. I'll write until lunchtime. I'll write through most of the afternoon. I may get involved in other things because my wife needs me to go to the shops or needs me to do whatever. We have a baby girl who is just about to turn 4 months this week.
Right, that's busy time.
And so that, as you can imagine, that's been a draw on time. I was expected to be there for the birth and such. And
strange that.
I did try to outsource the conception, but that was a no go.
Yeah.
But I will then write generally until midnight, taking a break at 10 o'clock to lift some weights, because I spend my life sitting on my backside, gradually morphing into the chair. So I'm trying to stay more or less the right shape.
Yeah.
But I am either writing or I'm marketing or I'm doing one of those other tasks that I simply have to do.
So what are your word counts?
Daily, anything between 6 and 10, occasionally less than that. I stop. So my process is write the book, and the book goes to the ARCS, and it comes back with a few proofreading bits and every now and then an observation, because I've got children being let out of school on a Sunday. That, you know, I might make that sort of error. But it comes back. I write clean. I don't know how. It's certainly not a discipline I've taught myself, but by luck, I write cleanly. So I get grammar and typos back. I will spend half a day correcting those, read through the book once more. So that process is a good day. And that's it finished. Then it goes to KDP and is published on whatever day I've chosen to publish it on. So that's the process for the book. And I will sit down and write between 6 and 10,000, probably five or six days a week.
Wow, that's so impressive, that dedication, and obviously so important to your success. You know, you're bringing in, what's $500,000 a year now, plus.
It's certainly heading in that direction, yeah.
Yeah, and there's a key to it. So what other series have you got going at the moment? So you're writing into 4 series at the moment?
So, yeah, I really wanted to expand my urban fantasy thing, because if I were picking up a book to read, it would probably be urban fantasy. I say I don't read. I've got the current Harry Dresden book by Jim Butcher, which is a big bestseller, and I've managed 4 chapters in, I think, 3 weeks. But I am enjoying it. But I wanted to do more with that, and I had a lot of ideas. So I started writing, and again, I stacked the stories and put 6 books out, one every 2 weeks, just to see how that would work. And that's called The Realm of False Gods. I'll say it's not selling very well. I need to sort of take it apart and see why that is, because it's got great reviews. It appears to be much loved by those who do read it. So I think really the issue here is in my marketing. It's either in the covers, which I think are on point for the genre, or in the blurb, which again I actually got help from an industry. A big industry name to get the first couple of book blurbs right, and have to trust that they probably are more or less right. But in general, it's not selling. And I say it's not selling. It's still selling better than the Blue Moon series did in the first 2 years. But it's not selling in any way near the numbers that my other series are selling now. And the remaining one that we haven't talked about is a series called Albert Smith's Culinary Capers.
Yeah, I was just looking at that again.
Well, here's the thing about writing to market. So I wanted to write another cozy mystery series, because the cozy mystery series I had was becoming quite mature, and I believed that readers would be keen to see something else. And I'd sort of established a presence in the cozy mystery genre. I've regularly got books in the top 50 in Amazon.com in those sort of cozy categories. So I wanted to put something else out there, and looked at what else I had. And this story of a man and a dog was something that came from reading a copy of National Geographic something like 25 years ago, and it just stuck in my head. And so I wanted to develop that into a series of mystery stories, loosely based on what I'd read with this Japanese dog, but then took a pause and looked at the culinary cozy mystery market. And Saturn wrote out the tropes. I looked at a number of books. I read extracts of books, because you can generally download the first sort of 5% or whatever. And what I needed to write in order to be writing to market was a young middle-aged woman, recently divorced or widowed, moving town to somewhere new and opening a cake shop. And you know, there's a few other bits on top of that. So I didn't do that. I picked a 78-year-old retired detective superintendent who'd been widowed for 12 months and couldn't cook and decided he was going to take a tour of the UK while sampling and learning how to cook some of his favourite dishes like Melton Mowbray pork pie and Bakewell tart and such. So in each new venue, he uncovers a mystery. And they're funny. I think that's the underlying thing that's selling them. The dog in it, who appears quite magnificently on the cover,
yes,
is called Rex Harrison.
Oh, brilliant!
He's a former police dog, and the only dog in the history of the Metropolitan Police to be fired for having a bad attitude.
Brilliant.
And he just provides a lot of fun by being, he's able to solve the case by sort of page 50 because he can smell the clues and despairs at the human's inability to use their most powerful sense.
So when we read the book, are we in the dog's mind and the human's mind? But yeah, the human doesn't know what the dog's thinking.
This is, the human tries to translate what the dog is thinking because the dog is trying desperately to get his message across. Apparently it's third omniscient.
Okay.
I didn't know what that was until I wrote a short for a charity anthology recently. I was invited to by an author friend, I guess. I've only met a very few authors, but I was invited to write for this. And she remarked on how well I'd written Third Omniscient. And I had to then ask her what on earth that was. Now, that person, that lady, is a writer who's been a writer her entire life and has written screenplays and film scripts and been in sort of that Hollywood environment. She's a proper writer. So Third Omniscient, I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, there you go. But you're good, isn't it?
But I'm in the head of multiple characters. Apparently, that's what it is. You're in the head of multiple characters, viewing things from their perspective.
Yeah.
And so the dog gets a voice, and the old man gets a voice, and the bad guy, laughing vaudevillian style, gets a voice too. But they are outselling anything I've written by quite a margin.
Wow.
And is that the cover? Is that just that I'm getting better at writing? Is that, I don't know what that is, but yeah, so there's three books out there. The Realm of False Gods, which have been out probably 6 or 7 months now, I've made about $10,000 off of that. Those three books have made 10,000 in a number of weeks.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I noticed in one of them, you've been to Stilton, which is just a couple of miles away from where I am. Now.
Right. Yeah. Well. Yeah. He's on a tour of the British Isles. He has enormous fun in Stilton, where all the all the cheese gets stolen.
Excellent. Good. I almost don't know what to say. You're an outlier, I think, in so many areas here. Yeah. You know, not reading books is
not doing anything. Not doing anything right. And I don't plot.
And you don't plot.
Honestly, I had a wonderful conversation with a developmental editor who's an author now, but he's sort of done, that's his background, about a number of things. He and I write urban fantasy that's quite close to each other. I guess he's followed me, but we were having a conversation, much like you and I now are, over the airwaves, and he asked me about my plotting process, and I don't even have a piece of A4. The concepts are in my head, and apparently it's really unusual, but I generally don't know who the killer is when I'm halfway through the book. I don't know how the book's going to end. The characters lead me through. Often, you know, I've said on the few occasions where I've set out and I do know in my head who the bad guy is going to be, he'll then change halfway through because he says, no, that's not my character.
Yeah.
That's
great. And you have that in common with
I'm strange.
No, it's okay. You have that in common at least with people like Marie Force, who also sits down and writes and is as excited as the readers to know how this is gonna
go. I'm glad I'm not completely alone.
Yeah, she's hugely successful as well, so that's gift. It's been really, really interesting talking to you, Steve, and I'm fascinated to see how this goes. You've got a real knack for it. You've obviously you've got a combination, I think, of that army discipline and armed forces discipline, actually quite prevalent in our community, both in America and in the UK, former services people who apply themselves in a really, you know, structure sounds a bit boring, but they apply themselves, leave it at that. But you've also got this gift for storytelling, which has obviously always been there, always been there. I can imagine on some of those boring moments in your army career, making up stories in your mind, and that in the end got the better of you and has led to this outpouring, which is fantastic.
Sure. Something like that.
So, yeah. So thank you so much indeed for joining us. Hopefully we'll see each other in person at one point when all this nonsense is over.
And that would be good.
And we can toast your success. So yeah, brilliant. So great to hear.
Well, yes. Well, yeah. I hope you get your book out there. I know you've been talking about it for a while.
I will. It's an RAF, I'm afraid, not army, which I'm sure the... how did you refer to the crabs? Is that what you call the RAF?
No, we just don't think about them.
You just don't. You don't even. They don't live worthy of a name.
Same as Boy Scouts.
Yeah, staying in their 4-star hotel. I have to say, couple of times I covered the RAF, it makes people laugh. I had a friend in the Kosovo engagement, which you may have been involved in. I don't know, but my friend ended up on a convoy through Albania to deliver aid, and it was the most grim experience for him. I mean, there were no toilets. They just drove for days. They got hospitality where they could. I was covering the Royal Air Force's air offensive, which was from a 4-star hotel in Gioia del Colle in southern Italy, where we ate mozzarella and with the pilots, mozzarella every night. Then they flew during the day, and I thought, well, who's the stupid one here?
My brother was in the RAF, and he did belittle me on a regular basis as I'm, you know, stitching my wounds closed.
Yes.
Shall we say.
Yeah. And he's wondering whether to use the spa that night.
Yeah. Which knife is it I use first?
Yeah. exactly. I did enjoy that banter. Great. Steve, thank you so much indeed for joining us. And well done.
No problem. Thank you very much.
This is the Self-Publishing Show. There's never been a better time to be a writer.
There you go. So, yes, sir, working a bit like me in a shed in his garden, incredibly dedicated. He's a hard worker. And I suppose, as my parents used to say to me, Mark, there is no substitute for hard work when you want to achieve something.
No, and we've said it before. The thing, you know, you've interviewed lots of people now, and we've taught thousands of people, and the thing that you see in the most successful authors, I think, is, let's assume a decent level of writing ability, but the thing that separates those who can write separates those people into those who are going to be successful tends to be just a determination, hard work, not giving up at setbacks, just pushing on and working through each problem as it arises. And Steve's clearly got that background from his army days, and is deploying it, pun intended, in his new career now, and doing really well. So, you know, good for him.
Yeah, fantastic. Good. Okay, well, we have lots of interviews coming on to the podcast in the next few weeks. I've been very busy. I've got two more to do this evening, actually. We're going to be talking about how to work with a coach, a book coach, or a development editor at that first draft stage, among other things. I should always say that we're always open to suggestions for guests. We're pretty full at the moment, but if you are desperate to hear somebody, you can just drop us a line, support@selfpublishingformula.com. Right, I need my beauty sleep after those interviews tonight if I'm going to look at my best for Mandy Hickson tomorrow. She's quaking if she's been listening in advance to these podcasts. She's now going to be nervous.
Reason.
Yeah, and we should say also we had a great reaction to Marie Force's interview last week. I know lots of people like that, so if you want to go back 1 week for that great interview with Marie, who is the queen of indie, I think. I'm going to crown her. Even though she's an insurgent American.
She's certainly, she's the Mrs. Simpson.
She's Mrs. Simpson. Yes, Wallace. Wallace Simpson, not Marge. Okay, great. Thank you very much indeed. All that remains for me to say is that it's a goodbye from him.
And it's a goodbye from me. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Get show notes, the podcast archive, and free resources to boost your writing career at selfpublishingshow.com.
Join our thriving Facebook group at selfpublishingshow.com/Facebook. Support the show at patreon.com/selfpublishingshow. And join us next week for more help and inspiration so that you can make your mark as a successful indie author. Publishing is changing, so get your words into the world and join the revolution with The Self-Publishing Show.